Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Once upon a time, there was a small town in the region of Lower Saxony, in what is today the country of Germany. The town was named Hamelin, and it had a problem. This modest medieval settlement had become overrun by rats. Despite all their best efforts, the people of Hamelin just could not rid themselves of this scurrying menace. They were getting desperate when, seemingly out of nowhere, a stranger came to town. The stranger wore an unusual multicolored outfit, a style known as pied. He also carried with him a beautiful silver flute. He presented himself to the town leaders and said that for a fair price, he would rid them of their rat problem once and for all. The town leaders were overjoyed and agreed to pay the piper the impressive sum of 1,000 guilders, so long as he delivered on his promise. The piper happily agreed. With that, the piper headed to the town square, where he took out his pipe and began to play a beautiful melody. It was not long before all the rats of Hamelin had crept out of their hiding places and had scurried towards where the piper was playing his tune. The piper then started to march out of town, and sure enough, all of the rats followed him. He then led the rats to a nearby stream and happily piped as the rodents dutifully plunged into the water and drowned. The rats were finally gone. The people of Hamelin were overjoyed and promptly threw a party to celebrate their town's liberation from the hated rats. During the festivities, the piper once again approached the town leaders and politely requested the 1,000 guilders that he had been promised. But the ungrateful and greedy town elders saw no need to pay the full price now that the rats were gone. Instead, they scoffed at the piper, offered him an insulting 50 guilders, and told him to go on his merry way. The piper was enraged, and as he left the town, he swore under his breath that he would have his revenge on the entire town of Hamelin. The next day, when all the adults of Hamelin were in church, the piper returned. He once again went to the town square, but this time he played a new tune on his pipe. Soon, every child in town had been lured from their home. I guess you didn't take your kids to church back then. Anyway, we're told that before long, the town square was filled with the children of Hamelin, all dancing to the piper's tune. The piper then marched out of Hamelin and the children followed. When the adults got out of church, all of their children had disappeared. Only three lingered behind: a deaf child who could not hear the music, a blind child who could not see where the piper was leading, and a child who could not walk, who simply could not follow the rest of his friends. These children told the bewildered townspeople exactly what happened. The children of Hamelin were never seen again. Some say they were led to a mountain where they lived with the piper. Others say they were drowned in the river like the rats before them. And others say that the piper opened a magic portal and transported all of the children east to Transylvania. The one thing that is certain is that the children of Hamelin never returned. So goes the tale of the Pied Piper of Hamelin, or at least so goes one of the most commonly repeated versions of the story. Like most folk tales, the story of the Pied Piper has dozens of variations. But no matter what version you're telling, all the stories share the same creepy premise. A stranger comes to town, plays a flute, and magically lures away all the town's children. Like all the best Germanic folktales, it is crazy dark. But perhaps the most fascinating thing about the tale of the Pied Piper is that many people believe that it might be based on a true story. A number of historical sources make reference to a disappearance of between 100 and 130 children from the town of Hamelin in the year 1284. What's going on here? Was there actually a mass kidnapping that took place in a medieval German town? If there was a real Pied Piper of Hamelin, who was he? What motivated him? And where did he take those kids? Let's find out today on Our Fake History. Episode number 77, Was There a Real Pied Piper? Hello and welcome to Our Fake History. My name is Sebastian Major and this is the podcast that explores historical myths and tries to determine what's fact, what's fiction, and what is such a good story that it simply must be told. This week, we turn our attention to the world of fairy tales and explore one of the most enduring historical mysteries preserved in German folk tradition. Now, as you know, on this show, we usually look at myths that work their way into history, but today we take the opportunity to turn the tables and look at history that might be lurking inside a well-loved myth. Before we take off to the town of Hamelin, first we need to take care of some business from last episode. If you listened to episode 76, where I interviewed John Waterlow, then you know that we announced a very special contest. If you were interested in winning a free copy of John's book, It's Only a Joke, Comrade, then you needed to email me with your best original joke about Stalin. All right. So I got a number of great emails, some from people who had grown up in Eastern Europe and had memories of living under communist governments and joking about them all the time. Thank you to everyone that sent me messages along those lines. I got dozens of jokes, but my personal favorite was one that was submitted by Sean Lane. I liked it because it was simple and somehow said so much about Stalin's regime. Here's Sean's joke. Quote, Comrade Stalin came up with a new directive. All police officers must work in groups of three. One to read, one to write, and one to watch the two intellectuals. I love that one. Like most Stalin jokes, it invokes more of a dark smile than a hearty laugh, but I really enjoyed it. So congratulations to Sean. A free copy of It's Only a Joke, Comrade is now winging its way to your mailbox. Okay, back to today's topic. Folk stories, myths, and legends are as old as humanity. Sometimes we use the term fairy tales as an easy shorthand for folk stories in general. But as many of you know, the collection of stories that we think of as capital F fairy tales are folk traditions from a very specific time and place, medieval Germany. The best known fairy tales like Cinderella, Snow White, the Frog Prince, and Rumpelstiltskin all come from German oral storytelling traditions. Why are these stories among the best known? Well, for that, we have to thank two 19th century German academics, Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm. At a time in history when questions of national identity were becoming more politically important, the brothers Grimm went out to discover what the German national identity might be by collecting the stories of average people. In 1812, the brothers Grimm published the first volume of their incredibly influential collection of stories, titled Children's and Household Tales. The stories collected in the Grimm's massive two-volume set, and in the successive studies like Deutsch Sagen, went on to be adapted and republished countless times. Those of us who first encountered these tales in the sanitized 20th century kid-friendly versions found in things like Disney movies and picture books, we are sometimes shocked by the violence and cruelty found in the versions first recorded by the Grimm brothers. Have you ever read the original Grimm brothers version of Cinderella? At one point, the evil stepsisters cut off their own toes, then they have their eyes pecked out by birds. I'm not making this up. That's what happens in Cinderella. Look it up. Now, of course, these stories have had their hard edges sanded off to be more appealing to modern sensibilities. However, The Pied Piper is a story that seems to resist this kind of sanitation. I suppose that's because, at its heart, this is a story about a mass abduction of children. There's really no way to tell the story and leave out the part where the kids are stolen from their parents. This is perhaps fitting when we consider that at the heart of this story, there may have been a real historical trauma. Something might have actually happened to the children of Hamelin during the late 13th century. This traumatic event, whatever it was, would be solemnly remembered by the people of that region for generations. The anniversary of the so-called disappearance of our children would be observed for at least the next 100 years. People would make art commemorating this event. So, what exactly happened? Well, let's dive into the historical sources and see what we can find out. Unlike many of the fantastical settings found in fairy tales, Hamelin is a real place that still exists today. In fact, the town has thoroughly embraced its local fairy tale. It celebrates it with yearly festivals and all sorts of touristy knickknacks featuring a man in multicolored clothes playing the pipe. However, in previous generations, the memory of the Pied Piper was commemorated rather differently. Instead of being celebrated, this was something that was mourned. To this day, the street that is believed to be the last place the children of Hamelin were seen with the piper is named Bungalowsundstrasse, which roughly translates to the street with no drums. It's called that because music and dancing of any sort is forbidden on that street. This type of solemn observance is quite in keeping with the first mentions of the child disappearance event in the historical sources. The earliest known reference to the event comes from a single haunting line found in the Hamelin Town Chronicle. In the year 1384, the chronicler recorded that, quote, "It has been 100 years since our children left," end quote. What a creepy little clue. No other details provided, just 100 years ago, our children left. It's the kind of detail that a group of kids would stumble upon in a Stephen King novel. Nonetheless, it points us towards a date for this event, 100 years previous to 1384, 1284. The next known written reference to the Pied Piper comes from a document known as the Lüneburg Manuscript, written around 1450, which reports, quote, "In the year 1284, on the day of Saints John and Paul on the 26th of June, 130 children born in Hamelin were seduced by a piper, dressed in all sorts of colors, and lost at Calvary near the Coppin," end quote. This same inscription also reportedly appears on the wall of a house in Hamelin that these days is called the Rattfanger House, or the Rat Catcher House, which was built sometime around 1603. So, what does this inscription actually mean? What is Calvary near the Coppin? Well, fans of the Bible might remember that Calvary was the place where Jesus was famously crucified. Coppin roughly translates to domed hill. So some scholars seem to think that this refers to an execution place near a local hill, which fits with the larger legend of the piper leading the children to a mountain. The Lüneburg manuscript also gives us the very specific date of June 26th, 1284, as the day that the piper took Hamelin's kids. This date appears again in one of the other early sources for the story. This source was a stained glass window in Hamelin's Market Church. The window was created sometime in the 1300s, but sadly, it doesn't exist anymore. It was destroyed in 1660. But descriptions of the window tell us that in the foreground, it featured a piper in a multicolored outfit playing the pipe, and in the background, you can see that same piper leading a group of children out of the town of Hamelin and towards a mountain. At the top of the stained glass window was the date 1284. We know what this window looked like because in 1532, the artist Augustin von Moorsberg made a weird little drawing of it. That drawing has survived, and I'll post a picture of it on the website and on the Facebook page if you want to check it out. It's appropriately weird. The Dutch writer John Weyer also claimed that the piper story was a true event. In 1577, he wrote that he had seen that weird stained glass window in the Market Church in Hamelin. Even more interestingly, he also claimed to have read since-vanished archival documents attesting to the truth of the piper event. He writes, quote, "These facts are thus written in the annals of Hamel and are religiously guarded in the archives. They are to be read also in the sacred books of the church and to be seen in the painted panes of the same, of which fact I am an eyewitness," end quote. Now, these little scraps of evidence aren't a lot to go on. However, between the descriptions of the stained glass window in the market church, the creepy little entry in the Hamelin Town Chronicle about the day the children left, the reference in the Lundberg manuscript, and the writings of John Weyer, we can at least say that there was a tradition of disappeared children that was taken seriously by the people of Hamelin dating back to the 1300s. We also have more than one reference to the year 1284 as the date that this Piper event allegedly took place. Now, if you've been paying attention, I'm sure you're wondering, where are the rats? I was wondering the same thing. I mean, is it the whole thing about the Pied Piper that he was a spurned rat catcher? Well, as it turns out, the earliest references to the Pied Piper say nothing about rats. Rats don't seem to come into the story until the mid-1500s, when they appear in the Zimmern Chronicle. The Zimmern Chronicle was recorded by a German aristocrat who retells the Pied Piper story, but for the first time there is mention of an infestation of rats and the Pied Piper is cast as a rat catcher. It's in the Zimmern Chronicle where myth first starts to intermingle with our facts. You see, the character of the magical rat catcher is somewhat common in the folklore of Northern Europe. The Pied Piper isn't the only magical rat catcher story out there. For instance, there's one from Denmark, simply known as the Rat Hunter. In that story, a mysterious rat catcher exterminates vermin by building a magical fire. That poor rat hunter eventually perishes when his magic vermin-trapping fire attracts the worst kind of vermin of all, a full-grown dragon. In the end, both the dragon and the rat catcher die in the flames. Man, those Danes really know how to punch up a story. I bring this up just to point out that the rat catcher trope is something that exists in the folklore independent of the Pied Piper. The modern version of the Pied Piper story is probably a mythical mashup. The potentially true story of children being led away by a piper seems to have been combined with the rat catcher trope sometime around the mid-1500s. By the time the story gets to the Grimms, it has been fully transformed into a fairy tale, complete with a moral. Honor your agreements. Don't break oaths. And most importantly, don't mess with drifters. Now, it might seem like I'm splitting hairs here, but the timeline on all of this matters. When and how things were introduced into the story are key to making sense of the various theories that explain the Pied Piper. Hopefully, by this point, I've made the case that something went down in Hamelin in the late 1300s. But we haven't gotten any closer to explaining what that something was. So let's look at the best theories on the Pied Piper and see what makes the most sense. How do we explain those few cryptic references to a mass abduction that appear in the historical record before the magical rat catcher story takes shape after the mid-1500s? Well, one of the most on-the-nose theories about the Pied Piper comes to us from the controversial American historian William Manchester. In his 1992 book, A World Lit Only by Fire, Manchester wrote the following about the Pied Piper. Quote, "The Pied Piper of Hamelin was a real man, but there was nothing enchanting about him. Quite the opposite, he was horrible, a psychopath and pederast, who, on June 24th, 1484, spirited away 130 children in the Saxon village of Hamel and used them in unspeakable ways. Accounts of the aftermath vary. According to some, the victims were never seen again. Others told of disembodied little bodies found scattered in the forest underbrush or festooning the branches of the trees." End quote. Now, Manchester's theory doesn't have much support in the academic world. Not only does Manchester get the date wrong for the event, and honestly, I don't even know how you do that, but he also seems to jazz up the event with his own gory details. His assertion also lacks plausibility, especially when you consider that the early sources speak of 130 children that are taken from Hamelin. Logic tells us that it would have been pretty difficult for one lone predator to make off with that many kids, even if their parents were all in church. It should probably come as no surprise that A World Lit Only by Fire was unmercifully criticized by academic reviewers in the 1990s. One critic, Jeremy Duquesne Adams, wrote in his review that Manchester's book contained, quote, "some of the most gratuitous errors of fact and eccentricities of judgment this reviewer has read or heard in quite some time." End quote. Ah, snap. Nothing worse than an academic burn. So if the Pied Piper wasn't a murderous pedophile, as William Manchester asserts, then who was he? Well, perhaps he wasn't a real person at all. Perhaps the Pied Piper was simply a symbol that was meant to signify death. German researcher Werner Ufing concluded that the 130 children of Hamelin weren't the victims of a pedophile, but were instead the victims of the Black Death. In support of this theory, Ufing and others have pointed to the similarities between the Pied Piper and the laughing figure of death sometimes portrayed in medieval art. Those who subscribe to Ufing's theory have pointed to the similarity between the famous stained glass window image of the Pied Piper and a group of medieval images known as the Danse Macabre. If you've never seen a Danse Macabre image, they are wonderfully weird. In these paintings and drawings, death, usually in the form of a gleeful skeleton, leads men and women in a perverse dance towards their own demise. In these images, death is sometimes pictured as a jester wearing the distinctive multicolored or pied outfit. The stained glass window is a bit of a puzzle in itself. It's a pretty unusual image to have displayed in a church. However, in the context of the artistic trope of the Danse Macabre, it does make a bit more sense. Perhaps some 100 children in Hamelin had become infected with the plague and had to be led outside of the town as a type of quarantine. The reason that nearby hill was their quote-unquote Calvary was because they died there in order not to infect the rest of Hamelin. Like the original Man of Calvary, they died so others could live. If we follow this theory, then the stained glass window can be understood as a type of commemoration of this event, a dance macabre where the piper fills in for death itself. Now, this is an interesting theory, but it has some holes. First, it doesn't account for the fact that early sources say that the children of Hamelin were quote-unquote seduced by the piper. Unless seduction is a metaphor for being taken by death, this doesn't quite add up. Also, death is rarely, if ever, depicted as a living piper in dance macabre imagery. Although the stained glass window has some stylistic similarities to the dance macabre, its differences are just as glaring. Finally, the dates don't really work. The plague, commonly known as the Black Death, that killed over a third of Europe's population, peaked between 1347 and 1351. Our early sources give us this crazy specific date of June 26th, 1284 for the Pied Piper event, placing it decades before the arrival of the plague in Europe. Now, there's no doubt that the plague eventually got wrapped into the Pied Piper lore. The fact that later versions of the story include rats seems to suggest a concern about the plague. Medieval people did eventually put it together that rats were involved with the spreading of the disease. Now, we know now that the disease was actually being spread by fleas that were on the rats that carried a deadly bacteria. Still, the association between rats and the plague wasn't wrong. The fact that the Pied Piper story eventually became about a rat catcher led some, like Uffing, to conclude that it was an allegory about the plague. But as we've learned, rats are a late addition to the Pied Piper story. Also, if we believe the date given on the stained glass window and in the Lundberg manuscript, then the Pied Piper event took place in 1284, well before the disease got to Europe. So, the medical quarantine theory, while plausible, leaves a few too many unanswered questions to be satisfying. The next theory has even less academic support, but it often gets brought up when people are discussing the Pied Piper, so I thought I better tell you about it. I read about this theory in Wolfgang Mitre's popular history of the Pied Piper titled The Pied Piper, A Handbook. This theory goes that 130 children in Hamelin were indeed lured away from the town, but it was not because they heard a magic flute. This theory goes that the children of Hamelin may have been convinced to embark on a children's crusade. So, what is a children's crusade? Well, the events that often get lumped together as the quote-unquote children's crusade are actually quite controversial. In fact, there's quite a lot of good scholarship that suggests that the children's crusade either didn't happen, was hugely exaggerated, or was massively distorted when it was recorded. In other words, the children's crusade might be a piece of fake history. And yes, I do plan on devoting an entire episode to that topic one day. But in a nutshell, the traditional story about the children's crusade is that in the early 1200s, a couple of very young, charismatic preachers started preaching to the children of France and Germany. The story goes that they convinced hundreds of kids, mostly young boys between the ages of 10 and 12 years old, to travel to the Holy Land on crusade. The thinking here was that only children who were free from sin could be counted on to either forcefully take back the Holy Land or peacefully convert the Muslims, depending on which source you favor. Now, the theory goes that the Pied Piper was actually a charismatic preacher who convinced the children of Hamelin to march away on crusade. This is supported by the use of the term cavalry in the Lundberg manuscript. Perhaps this meant the literal cavalry, which, tradition has it, is at the site of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. But as I said, this theory has little to no academic support. First of all, there's good reason to believe that the Children's Crusades were not as large a phenomenon as some medieval sources might suggest. Secondly, none of the primary sources about the Pied Piper mention religion, preaching, or going on crusade at all. Crusading movements were usually pretty clearly recorded, so it doesn't seem likely. Finally, our date is wrong again. The date traditionally given for the Children's Crusade is 1212 AD, which is over 70 years earlier than the year commonly given for the Piper event. Okay. So, the Pied Piper probably wasn't a lone murderous pedophile, an artistic metaphor for death, or a charismatic child preacher. So, we're still left with the question, who was he? Well, let's go one step deeper and see what the best modern scholarship tells us about this story. We've looked at three different attempts to decode the Pied Piper story, but so far, none of them have offered a really satisfying explanation for what went down in 1284. But don't worry, now we're getting into the really good stuff. One of the most fascinating theories is that the disappearance of Hamelin's children can be explained by an outbreak of dancing plague. Okay, so what is dancing plague? Well, the dancing plague is one of the weirdest examples of mass hysteria or mass psychogenic illness ever in history. The dancing mania, sometimes called St. Vitus's dance or St. John's dance, gripped entire towns in Europe between the 13th and 16th centuries. Basically, a group of people would start dancing in some public place, and they just wouldn't stop. The dancing mania also seemed weirdly contagious. People would see the dancers, and before long, they would join them. Now, this all sounds like fun and games until you consider that people were literally dancing themselves to death. They couldn't stop themselves. People would eventually collapse from exhaustion, or in the most extreme cases, their hearts would give out and they would die. Academic Neil Harding described one outbreak of dancing plague like this. Quote, "At Aix-la-Chapelle in 1374, men, women, and children joined hands and danced together in the streets for hours. The dancers shrieked, chanted, saw visions, called upon both God and demons, and finally fell down, complaining of severe abdominal pain and bloating. End quote. Now, I know I'm always trying to slip cool band names into the show, but the scientific term for people affected by the dancing plague is choreomaniacs. And if one of you out there doesn't name a ska band the Choreomaniacs, then I'm going to be very disappointed. Okay, so what was causing this choreomania and creating these choreomaniacs? Well, once again, there are a number of theories. Some think that this phenomena was entirely psychological, a type of group hypnosis brought on by the unique stresses of medieval life and paired with a type of religious ecstasy. There have been other weird moments of seemingly uncontrolled group behavior like this that have popped up throughout history. So this kind of uncontrollable groupthink might be something that is programmed deep into our brains going back to hunter-gatherer times. Others think that the dancing plagues can be explained as the result of something called ergot poisoning. Now, this has come up on the podcast before. Actually, back when we discussed Joan of Arc, ergot poisoning was in the mix. Ergot, as you might remember, is a fungus that grows on rye, and when ingested, it acts like a psychedelic drug, like LSD. If you ingest enough ergot, you can start hallucinating, seeing visions, and experiencing uncontrollable muscle spasms. So perhaps these spontaneous dancing outbreaks were due to entire towns being dosed with a hallucinogen because ergot had started to grow on the rye they were baking into their bread and brewing into their beer. There are a number of other psychological illnesses that might also account for the dancing. But one thing that all the experts agree on is that the dancing mania seemed to especially affect children. I think you see where I'm going with this. In fact, in Germany in 1237, a large group of children were suddenly taken by the dancing plague, and they apparently danced all the way from Erfurt to Arstadt, which is roughly a 20-kilometer journey if you don't know your German geography. So we know that the dancing plagues affected kids and that they could potentially be deadly. Now here's where things get really interesting. Sometimes towns would deal with an outbreak of dancing plague by hiring musicians to play for the dancers and lead them out of the town. This often worked, as the dancers had a habit of just following the music. This would keep them from seducing more people into their mania and prevent them from damaging anything in the town as a result of their non-stop boogieing. So, this is where Neil Harding puts the pieces together for us. He writes, quote, "Local civic authorities often hired musicians to play for choreomaniacs, especially in the 14th century during large-scale epidemics when the town fathers wanted to lure unruly mobs of dancers away from populated centers and into the countryside. It's been suggested that the famous tale of the Pied Piper of Hamelin may have had a factual basis in a situation such as the one shown here. In the Salentine Peninsula of Italy, between the 15th and 18th centuries, a special kind of music, the tarantella, was played as therapy for tarantism, an indigenous type of dancing mania that was thought to be caused by the bite of the tarantula. It may be that the use of music in the procession was similarly intended as a homeopathic remedy for the dancing illness." End quote. So maybe the Pied Piper was just a local musician hired to remove the children from the town of Hamelin because they had become choreomaniacs. In this case, the choreomania proved fatal, and perhaps the piper was blamed. I love this theory, mostly because I find the phenomena of dancing mania so fascinating. The choreomania explanation seems entirely plausible, and it helps explain some of the weirdness in the Pied Piper story. Indeed, the dancing plague did seem like a type of black magic. However, most medievalists who have looked closely at this mystery have come to a different conclusion. What most historians of the era seem to favor is something known as the emigration theory. Let me explain. In the late 1200s, there was a mass movement of people from Germany, and specifically the region of Lower Saxony, where Hamelin is located, further east in Europe. As a result of the Mongol invasions and a handful of other wars in the region in the early to mid 13th century, Eastern Europe had been severely depopulated. There were large swaths of excellent farmland more or less going to waste. It's even been reported that entire gold mines were abandoned as the result of the violence that swept through what would have been the modern countries of Poland, Hungary, Romania, and the Czech Republic, to name just a few. Literal gold mines just sitting there. Meanwhile, other regions in Central Europe, like Germany, were experiencing overpopulation. So, there was a movement, especially among the Saxons, to migrate east. So what does this have to do with the Pied Piper? Well, in one of the most popular versions of the Pied Piper story, the one that inspired Robert Browning's famous poem, it's said that the piper, using some kind of magic, transported the children to Transylvania. Now, Transylvania seems like kind of a random destination until you consider that Transylvania, in what is today modern Romania, was a very popular spot for Saxon settlers who moved east around the end of the 13th century. Those of you who have heard the extra episode titled Who Was the Real Dracula know that it was the Saxons of Transylvania who were responsible for Vlad the Impaler's bad press. All of this is to say that it's interesting that there are versions of the Pied Piper story where he takes the kids east to a popular Saxon migration spot. This theory becomes even more compelling when you consider how the emigration of hundreds of thousands of Germans played out on the ground. In the late 1200s, men known as locators traveled around from town to town in Lower Saxony and Westphalia, trying to recruit people to join them on their trek east. These locators were trying to ensure the survival of their new communities once they got to the Promised Land. So they would try and convince young, healthy people, preferably tradespeople, to come and join their merry band of emigrants. The theory goes that the Pied Piper was one of these locators. If you're not convinced, then consider this. When the locators entered a new town, they would usually bang some drums, and you guessed it, play some pipes to get people's attention. Professor Jürgen Udolf, who is a leading proponent of the emigration theory, has also pointed out that the locators, quote, wore multicolored robes just like the musician in the story, end quote. Now, Professor Udolf is careful not to jump to any conclusions, but according to a number of other German scholars, there's a good chance that the Pied Piper was a locator. The early sources that speak of 130 children who left Hamelin may actually have been using the term children more metaphorically. the people that went with the guy in the multicolored clothes playing a pipe were actually just young tradespeople looking to start a new life in Eastern Europe. These missing people weren't literal children, they were metaphorical children. They were the town's children in the same way that we might call a young adult a native son or daughter of a particular place. As much as I love the dancing plague theory, the emigration theory really does help all the pieces of our jigsaw puzzle fit together. The multicolored piper is given a real historical analog. The number of people he takes with him, 130, seems a plausible number that could have joined up with a locator, never to return. The year 1284 and the place, Hamelin in Lower Saxony, is exactly the right time and place that these locators were operating. Finally, it even helps explain the haunting little line in the town chronicle. It has been 100 years since our children left. Solemnly commemorating this kind of mass migration is actually quite common throughout history. While I was reading through the stuff on the emigration theory, I was reminded of work that was done by my former public history master's supervisor, Professor John Walsh at Carleton University. He had done some writing on the phenomenon of old boys and girls reunions here in Ontario. You see, Ontario in the late 1800s was not all that different from Lower Saxony in the late 1200s. There was a massive movement where people picked up everything and migrated. But in Canada's case, people were not heading east. They were heading west to places like Saskatchewan and Alberta to take advantage of government land grants. Much like Hamelin, small towns in Ontario saw noticeable chunks of their population suddenly disappear. But in commemoration of this, some towns in Ontario started a tradition known as the Old Boys and Girls Reunion. Once every 10 years, all the emigrants would return from the West and reunite in their old Ontario towns. Some towns are still holding these events in 2018. The town of Kincardine, Ontario, for example, has a particularly awesome old boys and girls reunion. It's like Canadian rural Mardi Gras. You rock, Kincardine. I bring this up because it helps demonstrate how these types of mass migrations can make a mark on the public memory of a town. I couldn't help but notice how we here in Ontario call these full-grown adults who moved across the country boys and girls. In other words, we called them kids. When Hamelin lost their kids, they may have just lost their old boys and girls, young adults who were seeking their fortune in greener pastures and were, quote-unquote, seduced by a piper. Most serious academics of the era seem to agree that a mass migration is the best explanation for Hamelin's sudden loss of 130 young people. Most of the debate now centers on where exactly these emigrants went. Some have suggested that it was the Czech Republic, others say Transylvania. Jürgen Udolf has used a study of traditional Hamelin last names in Polish phone books to support his hypothesis that the Hamelin emigrants eventually resettled in parts of East Germany and Poland. In the end, the story of the Pied Piper remains haunting. Even the more conservative theories concerning the Piper's true identity are still pretty bizarre. He was still a stranger who appeared one day and, using little more than charm, music, and a cool multicolored outfit, made off with the town's most prized possession, the young people. And even if these young people were not literal children, they still represented the spirit and vitality of the town. Once they were gone, the town felt emptier, darker, and drained of the life it once had. The town vowed never to forget, and in a way, it hasn't. While the tale of the Pied Piper has morphed and changed over the centuries, the people of Hamelin still remember the moral of the story. Beware of traveling strangers, and never try to trick a trickster. Okay, that's all for this week. Thanks again for joining us. Join us again in 2 weeks' time when we will explore another historical myth. Before we go this week, I would like to give a shout out to the following people. Big shout out to Billy M. Diaz, Ward Noble, and Devin Scott Leslie. All of you have decided to support the show at $5 a month on Patreon. So you know what that means. It makes you beautiful human beings. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Honestly, the Patreon support really makes a huge difference in my life. I know I say it every episode, but it's true. Okay? It really makes a difference. So thank you to everyone that's supporting at all the levels. If you want to support the show and you want to get in on all the goodies that you get when you sign up for Patreon, then you should head over to patreon.com/ourfakehistory. Honestly, that's now a pretty long list of stuff that you get if you support, especially at the $3 and $5 levels. So go and check it out there. But hey, I know that not everyone's got money to spare every month. I understand. So if you want to do something nice for the show, you can always go and rate and review us on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, or on any other podcast app that lets you rate and review shows. Nice reviews and ratings go a long way. They get people interested in the show. So if you want to support us, but you don't got the extra scratch, just do a little review. That would be super nice. If you would like to get in touch with me, you can always send me an email at ourfakehistory@gmail.com. You can hit me up on Twitter at ourfakehistory, or you can go to the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/ourfakehistory, and you can follow along with everything I'm posting there. I'm going to be putting up a bunch of pictures that have to do with this show. But if you're listening to this in the future and you're ever like, oh man, what about those pictures you put up on Facebook? Seems like they're gone now. You can always go and see them at ourfakehistory.com on the page for this particular episode. I'll have the picture up of the Pied Piper stained glass window and maybe some dance macabre images as well. All right. The theme music for the show comes to us from Dirty Church. You can check out Dirty Church at dirtychurch.bandcamp.com. And all the other music you heard on the show today was written and recorded by me. My name is Sebastian Major, and remember, just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't real.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
At Capella University, You'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.